We're in our second shiur on Parshat Vayetze. Today we're going to talk about a topic that comes up throughout the Parsha, is emphasized multiple times in the context of the first, what we're referring to as the first paragraph itself, even though as we discussed last time, the Parsha actually isn't divided up into paragraphs, but the first section which deals with the story of Yaakov coming to Beit HaMikdash, to Makom HaMikdash, and having the dream that he has, and naming it Beit Kel. There is an object that appears there that again appears throughout the Parsha, which is a central theme to the Parsha that we're going to try to unpack today. What object appears multiple times throughout the story in the beginning of Parshat Vayetze, who is not in the winter midrash? What do you think if you either were in the winter meter shot or you read the title of the shir on the top of your page?
Stones,
avanim, come up again and again and again over the course of the opening paragraph. Let's read it together. It's source number one on your sheets, and also the beginning of the parsha in your chumashim. Perek chafet pasuk yud. Vayitzi Yaakov be'er shava vayelech charana. Vayifga b'makom vayalen sham. He comes to the place and he sleeps there. Kibah Hashemesh, because the sun had set. Vayikach mehavnei hamakom. He takes from the stones of the place. Vayaseh mirashotav, and places them under his head. Vayishkat makom ahu. Skipping to the end of the dream. Pasuk yudchet. Vayashkim Yaakov v'boker, vayikach et ha'even asher sam mirashotav. He wakes up in the morning and he takes the stone that he had placed under his head again back to that even. Vayasam otam atzivah, and then he makes that stone into a monument. Vayitzok shemen al rosha, and then pours oil on top of that stone, that monument. Vayikra et shim makumahu Beit Kel, and he calls the name of the place Beit Kel. Chafbet. Again, emphasizing it, va'even azot asher samti matzeva, and this stone which I made as a monument, yeah, Beit Elokim, this is going to be the cornerstone of Beit Hamikdash. This even, these avanim, come up again and again and again in the opening part of the parsha. Where else do avanim come up in this parsha? Parsha Vayetze. What happens? Yaakov has a dream, and then he goes where?
To the well.
Where he pushes the even, he pushes the stone, the rock, off of the well, and that's where he meets Rachel. Right? So many important turning points in Chumash take place at wells. And this is a massive turning point for Yaakov as he meets who's going to be his most beloved wife, the one who he's looking to marry the entire time. And then at the end of the Parsha, after he gets to Beit Laban and has all of his children and decides to leave, where does the even come up again?
He and Laban
draw a line in the sand, and they set up an even. They set up a monument there on that spot to say, this is the crossing point. This is my side, this is your side, and we will never cross into each other's territory again. So Avanim themselves are playing a role throughout the Parsha, and certainly condensed within this opening scene in the context of Yaakov Avinu and his dream. So we're going to try to unpack what is this concept of an even and why is it so important. Let's zoom out for a second. Right, we're still at the beginning of Parshat Vayetze, and it's not just the beginning of Parshat Vayetze, but there is actually a significant shift. I believe we spoke about it at the end of last semester in the context of Parshat Toldot. But there's actually a significant shift that takes place in this Parsha, in Parshat Vayetze. For the first half of Sefer Bereishit, and we talked about this also like last week, I think we mentioned it again. The first half of Sefer Bereishit is dealing very much with searching for the individual that eventually will be Yaakov. It's a selection process. Starting with Gan Eden, where Tov and Ra become mixed together. Starting with Gan Eden, where Tov and Ra become mixed together, then there's a need to continuously select out the elements that we're looking for. And we select away and select away and select away. I until we get to Avraham Avinu. And then once we do get to Avraham Avinu, what we spent so much of last semester talking about was even selecting within the context of Avraham Avinu. Selecting away Yishmael in order to get to Yitzchak. Selecting away Esav in order to finally get to Yaakov. And that selection process finally comes to an end in Parshat Toldot, where we have the final selection between Yaakov and Esav, where Yaakov is the chosen of the two, making that final selection process in Sefer Bereishit. Meaning once we reach Yaakov, there are no longer elements within the system that need to be selected out. All of Yaakov's descendants are going to be a part of Klal Yisrael. From Bereishit to Toldot is the selection process leading to Yaakov. Yaakov, whose name is going to be changed to Yisrael, because he is going to be the prototype Yisrael. He is literally the Maaseh Av of Klal Yisrael. He is Klal Yisrael, the prototype Klal Yisrael. But the selection to Yisrael, to Yaakov, is the first half of Sefer Bereishit. From Parshat Vayitzeh, our Parsha, all the way until the end of Sefer Bereishit, all the way until Parshat Vayechi, is a whole second phase of the Sefer. We're finished with selections, and now we're focusing on the spreading out of Yaakov, or Yisrael, into the components that will make up Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael in its prototype form in our Sefer, and Klal Yisrael that will actually emerge as the actual Klal Yisrael in which Sefer? Where does Klal Yisrael born in which Sefer? Louder? Sefer Shmuel. Right, with Yitziyat Mitzrayim. Yitziyat Mitzrayim, which in many sources in Chazal is literally compared to a birth, Klal Yisrael is born, and we become a people. Sefer Shmot gives birth to Klal Yisrael, Yitziyat Mitzrayim, but the rest of Sefer Bereishit itself is focused on producing the components that will ultimately make up that Klal Yisrael. This idea that Klal Yisrael comes into its formation, based on these building blocks, but comes into the formation in Sefer Shmot, is actually emphasized in the very end, in the final chord of Sefer Shmot. Either flip forward in your Chumashim to the very end of Sefer Shmot, or take a look in source number 2 on your sheets. This is literally the final pasuk in Sefer Shmot. What's the term here? Beit Yisrael. All of Sefer Shmot is setting out to accomplish a reality of Klal Yisrael, a reality of Beit Yisrael. That's why it's contained within that last pasuk. That's the end point. That's the goal. From being in Mitzrayim until coming into our fully formed stage, in whatever way that is, dignifying that we need Vayikra, Bamidbar, and Devarim afterward, our fully formed stage is Beit Yisrael at the end of Sefer Shmot. Coming back to our Inyanim, we said the goal here is to get to Beit Yisrael. What is a bayit made out of?
Stones.
Stones. A bayit is made out of stones. A bayit is made out of avanim. The avanim that are going to be creating Beit Yisrael in Sefer Shmot are being formed here in Sefer Bereishit. The formation of the avanim that will become the foundations of Beit Yisrael are the avanim that we're producing in Sefer Bereishit that will then manifest in Sefer Shmot. We noted that we're right now at the midway point, really, of Sefer Bereishit, where things shift focus. How many parshiot are there until Parshat Toldot, and how many parshiot are there from Parshat Vayitzeh to the end of the Sefer? Look in the index of your Chumash. Play a Parsha song in your head.
Six.
6 until this point and 6 until the next point. We're literally at the midway point. But if you take the entire Sefer as a whole then, and assume perhaps that there is significance to the number of parshiot as well, how many parshiot total do we have? 12. That somehow the goal, the end point of Sefer Shmot is to produce 12 parts. 12 fundamental building blocks that will eventually become the foundation of Sefer Shmot and the foundations of Klal Yisrael. So clearly Parshat Vayetze, in which Yaakov is going out to create those items that are going to be that we're going to be using to build up Beit Yisrael and Sefer Shmot, he's going to be going out to build Avanim. Therefore, the Parsha that produces these building blocks is going to revolve around this concept of Avanim. Let's go deeper into what Avanim actually are. To do that, we're going to go to a pasuk where Klal Yisrael is actually described in the context of Avanim. In Parshat Vayechi, when Yaakov gives the brachot to each one of the shvatim at the end of his life, in one of the brachot, he's speaking to Yosef HaTzadik. And he says, if you take a look in source number 3, which is the bracha that he gives to Yosef, take a look at Pasuk Chavdalet. Bateshev be'itan kashto. He says, and this is a lot to unpack here. They're very flowery, very beautiful, very deep psukim. Very dense psukim in this brachot that Yaakov gives over to his children. But it says, Bateshev be'itan kashto. His bow was held back with strength. Vayafozu zro'e yadav. Misham midei avir Yaakov. Misham ro'e even Yisrael. There will shepherd the Evan Yisrael, the stone of Israel. Interestingly, does anybody know what episode in Yosef's life Yaakov is referring to according to the Mefarshim and Chazal? His interaction with Eshet Potiphar. So now this Evan Yisrael piece in this whole story, we're talking about Yaakov coming out to build his children, and we're talking about Yosef, the bracha, the Evan Yisrael is coming out of the context of Yosef, making sure that he doesn't take that potential and put it in a negative direction, but withholds it. He keeps his bow pulled back and doesn't let those arrows shoot out. He holds his bow back, he holds himself back, in order to make sure that all of his potential energy, all of his creative energy is focused in the right place. Definitely overlapping inyanim here. To produce this reality of what's referred to as Evan Yisrael. So again, very nice that we now have this concept of Evan Yisrael that pulls these two concepts together. But what's the meaning of Evan Yisrael? We still haven't given depth to the word word Evan, which is what we have Unklos for. Amazingly, take a look at the way that Unklos, Targum Unklos, translates, and Unklos is the way that the Gemara describes that the Ruach HaKodesh that Unklos had is because he wasn't just literally translating. There's a lot of depth to what he's bringing out. Every once in a while, he veers left to right from the strict shot to bring out very, very, very deep things. And this is one of those many instances where he says, "Divrei Razan." He's just translating the pasuk. Avan ubenin zara di Yisrael. What two words is he using to translate the word Evan? Anybody catch it? In the other one? Here it's Avhan Ubnin, which Rashi then translates into Hebrew in the next source, quoting from Unklos, so no chikun av ubain. In the most fascinating way, look what's happening here. We have the word Evan, and Unklos and Rashi are pulling apart the word Evan and saying that somehow Evan is indicative of Av. And Ben. A father-son relationship, a parent-child relationship. What does that mean? What's going on? What is Unklos trying to bring out here in saying that there is a connection between Evan and Av and Ben? What is Rashi trying to bring out here? Yeah.
Could there source 3, I think, where we're, like, what the context is that we're directing all the time?
Very simply, Yaakov is giving a bracha to Yosef, and he refers to him as Evan Yisrael, putting those two concepts together. He's somehow the stone of Israel, the rock of Israel. And in that context of referring to somehow being a foundation of Klal Yisrael and Evan Yisrael, that's where these mefarshim bring out that somehow Evan means Av and Ben.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, when Unklus and Rashi say that Evan is somehow a contraction of Av and Ben, two things to note there. One is, this is not like a cute idea. They're bringing out a depth of the essence of what this word is about. We often sometimes hear ideas that are presented as these cute ideas. Oh wow, look at that, if you break it up. No, it's not cute, it's real. I mean, you also think it's cute, but it's also real. Right? It's very deep, it's very significant. We have to understand, what does this really mean? And second of all, if we're saying that Evan is Av and Ben, it's not just like, no, don't read it as Evan, read it as Av and Ben. It's saying, no, in HaMikra Yotzei Midei Pishuto. A pasuk, a word, never leaves its original meaning. It means that somehow the concept of Evan and the relationship of Av and Ben, they must be linked. They must be linked. How are they linked? And what does that mean? So let's talk about Avanim. What's so special about Avanim? What is special about rocks? What is special about stones? What does the image of a stone, what words pop into your mind? What images pop into your mind when you think of a stone?
It doesn't go away. It's there for a while.
Concept of eternal. Good.
Strong.
Solid. Actual images. When you think of stones, what image pops to your mind? Visual image.
The Kotel.
Kotel? That work for anybody? Yes, no, maybe?
Yes.
Maybe. Maybe it's stones, maybe it's bricks. I haven't seen it in a while. You should go back. You should check out Israel now.
Good. Kotel.
Right. What?
Gray.
Somebody said that in the Midrasha, in the Winter Midrasha also. I don't know if you can spell it with an A or E, but I don't know if you, stones are not necessarily only gray. We talked about this there also, like, I don't know why it gives them back that. Well, no, you could also have, like...
I mean, Jerusalem stone is cream colored, so it's not gray.
Also, you have deep reds, and you have, like, if you go into, like, deserts, you have very deep, beautiful reds and yellows and, like, very colorful stones. No? Yes. If the most difficult hike you've ever been on is through Queens, then you have a lot of the world to see also. So don't just go back, hike your way through Israel. You'll have a very meaningful experience. But in any event. Very, very strong words here. Eternal, strong, solid. Images of the Kotel come to mind also. There's a sense by Avanim, there's a sense of eternity. There's a sense of things being ongoing. There's a sense of continuity. Again, the image of the Kotel in our minds, the Kotel Maraviv, this wall that was there from Bayit Rishon that stayed and stayed and stayed and somehow still remains. This ongoing continuity that seems to stand at the center of what it means, of what an Evan is. Speaking of beautiful places in Eretz Israel, you know, that when I think in my mind, immediately, when I say, what's the most beautiful place in your mind in Eretz Israel? In my mind, I go back to when I did Yam Yam around Pesach time, and everything's just in full bloom, and you're down in the north, and it's gorgeous, and you're hiking by yourself with 3 other people, and no tour guide, and no medic. I don't know if that was maybe just me, not you. But, like, I have this image in my mind of this amazing view of these trees and these mountainsides, and it's gorgeous. And there's something very beautiful about that. But that's specifically in the springtime, that's passing. But I also remember in my second year in Israel, I was able to spend some time in a yeshiva in the desert. I went there just to get away. It's my lesson this year. I went there in the yeshiva that I was in. If you didn't follow the rules of the yeshiva, and they wanted to separate you and isolate you so you can actually start thinking about life, they would send you to a yeshiva in the south where there was literally nothing and no one around. It was pure desert, one yeshiva, it was a little ghost town. Now I think there's like a resort there, which is so sad to me. It was a ghost town 10 years ago, 15 years ago. You just got to sit there and like look out at the beautiful desert. All that was there was an Israeli yeshiva, the Rav Kook style yeshiva. And it was just a wonder. It was an incredible experience. I didn't get in trouble with this. If you know me, that's not really my speed. If I'm going to do something, I don't want to get caught. But I didn't get in trouble. But in my Shana Bet, I needed to get away from all the Americanness and just clear my head. And so I asked to go to Gullis. They allowed me to go for a week. And I just sat there and just sat there. The learning was beautiful, but also just taking time every day and going out into the desert. And there's something so beautiful about the stillness of the desert, about the endurance of the desert, about the eternal side of the desert, the strength of the desert, the continuity of the desert. It's unchanging. It's stable. It's continuous. You feel that when you sit there and look over the mountains. There's that truth. There's that real sense to what an Evan is about. In the human body, what part of the body is also like most stone-like? What part of the body is the almost eternal side of the physical being of the self? A person's bones. Right? That's the side that continues on. That's the side that doesn't fall apart, that doesn't disintegrate. One's flesh is the part of oneself that's passing. One's bones continue on. That's one of the reasons why bones are called atzamot, milashon etzem, where an etzem is a bone. But what does etzem also mean? Essence. Atzmi is myself. Since it's the most deepest and most continuous part of my physical being, it's the most reflective of that eternal side. It's my atzmi, it's myself. It's my essem, and my etzem, it's my essence. It reaches to a deeper place in me, and that's why one's bones are what lasts eternally, and it's from one's bones that one experiences Tzkiyat HaMetim. The body is rebuilt around the bones. That's the most rock-like, the most Evan-like part of us. I wasn't sure where to put this part before or after. We'll put it here. That's why, and it's a funny, I think I heard this in a shir by Rabbi Akiva Tetz, where he points out that's why when one goes to a graveyard, when one goes to visit a gravesite, what do people normally put on a gravesite?
Flowers.
Flowers. What do we put on a gravesite? Stones. Think about it. Think about the way the outside world looks at the nature of life. You're here, and then you die, and you're gone. And so they bring something which is incredibly beautiful, they place it on that gravesite, and eventually it disintegrates and goes away, which is very much in the image of their view of life. Ever wonder why we put stones? It's so anticlimactic. It's like, that's a really nice bouquet you've got. I just picked this up off the ground. Right? Why do we put a stone? Because we're reflecting the fact that this is the final resting place of this body. But the essence of this person remains eternal. It's a recognition at the place where the body is buried that the person is eternal, the soul goes on. And that bone-like, that rock-like piece of the person, that person's bones that are there, they're going to come back as well. It's a totally different perception of what we do, of how we relate to, from such a much more emistic place of what it means to visit a gravesite. Mm-hmm. Connecting those stones and bones. Anyway, we'll come back to that soon. But coming back to our topic now of Av and Ben. Of Av and Ben. Yaakov is going out to create the building blocks of Klal Yisrael. He is going out to create Av-Ben relationships that are going to produce the 12 Shvatim. He's going to outcreate father-son relationships, Av-Ben relationships, that are going to produce 12 children who are going to become the Shvatim. And when you think about it, think about what's so special about these individuals that are born in this Parsha, 11 out of the 12 tribes. What's unique about the names? Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Binyamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Yosef. What's unique about these names? They're names of?
Things that happened to.
We'll definitely be getting to that soon. But they're names of, simply?
Meaning?
Simply, they're names of?
Shvatim.
Before that?
People.
People. But not only are they names of people, what did you say? What did you say before that? The names of Shvatim. Meaning, on the one hand, these individuals of Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda are being produced here. On a deeper level, what's happening is that we're producing Shvatim. Reuven, the individual, may die, but he will end up becoming a group of people where the individuals that make up the group may come and go throughout the generations. But the reality called Reuven remains in this world in the form of that Shevet forever. Individuals with Reuven may, within Reuven may come and go, but Reuven lasts forever. And Reuven becomes more than the name of an individual. When we say the tribe of Reuven, the tribe of Yehuda, we say the tribe of Yehuda, we don't just mean the descendants of the individual named Yehuda. There is an essence of what it means that there is a tribe called Yehuda. That name is essential to that eternal peace of Klal Yisrael. We're leading to something much deeper than just the individual who that Shevet came from. When Yaakov was out to create these building blocks, these avanim in Haran, he's not only going out to give birth to children and be Mekai in the mitzvah of Pru Revu alone. He's producing what will become 12 eternal groups, which will go on and on and are not dependent on the individuals that make it up. These are Av-Bain relationships that he's going to establish that are going to become the avanim of Klal Yisrael. These individuals are going to reflect their eternal side, their continuous side, as they become Shvatim and continue on for eternity. Yaakov is producing those building blocks, those Avanim, those prototype building blocks, foundation stones, that will eventually become the 12 actual pieces of Beit Yisrael. And that's the overlap between the Evan and the Av and Ben. Aside from the 12 Shvatim, there's one more name in the context of these stories that we will be learning that becomes eternal. What other name becomes eternal in addition to the names of the Shvatim themselves?
Yisrael.
Yaakov, as we said before, becomes Yisrael, becomes the prototype Yisrael. Yisrael Saba becomes the beginning of an entity called Klal Yisrael. An entity called Klal Yisrael, which will also be eternal. Again, as those of you who were here last year when we learned Sefer Devarim, we talked about this in the context of the Britot in Kitavo and Mitzavo. Individuals in Klal Yisrael are not guaranteed eternity, but Klal Yisrael as a whole is guaranteed eternity. And that's one level of the meaning of the Gemara that we're going to come back to many, many times over the next couple of the next few months, till the end of the semester. We're going to keep coming back to this Gemara. Take a look in source number 7. The Gemara says, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Yaakov Avinu lo meit. Yaakov Avinu doesn't die. And the Gemara itself struggles with that. It says, what do you mean he doesn't die? There were hespedim that the Chumash talks about. And they embalmed him. And then they buried him. What are you going to tell me that Yaakov Avinu does die? I read Chumash. It's right there. You can't tell me Yaakov Avinu doesn't die. And one level of the meaning of the fact that Yaakov Avinu doesn't die, and it's beautiful because the Gemara brings it out. Rabbi just quoted Yaakov Avinu lo mate, but you read the whole Gemara, which he knew, he just didn't reference it. You take it all the way to the end. Take a look after the period, after the quote from the Pasuk. Make Yishu lezaro. He's eternal because he is equated to his descendants. Mazaro b'chayim, afku b'chayim. As long as his descendants are alive, he's alive, and his descendants are guaranteed to be eternal, and therefore Yaakov, Yisrael, remains eternal. Speaking of Yisrael as being the prototype of Klal Yisrael, this eternal side of Klal Yisrael as a whole, let's link to some things that we talked about last time. Last time we talked about how we have that system of Sfirot, we have Chesed, Gvurah, and Tiferet. And we said that Yaakov Avinu is the one who brings out the Midah of Tiferet in reality. What did we say the Midah of Tiferet, what is that associated with? What is that linked to? What is that parallel in the human body? The torso, and specifically the
spine.
We talked about the connections between the spine and the ladder this is in his dream. What extends from the spine of a human being? Literally.
Ribs.
The ribs. How many ribs does this person have? 12 ribs. 12 ribs extending out from that spine. 12 pieces, 12 parts extending out from that spine. And not just extending out from that spine, but what does the ribcage actually do? What is the function of the ribcage? It protects the heart. It protects your internal organs. Which, my brother pointed out, and it's impossible not to see that if you're familiar with the structure and Klal Yisrael and how Chumash works. Is there anything that we've ever learned in Midrash Shabbos for years, or those of you who know Chumash, I don't care. Is there anything that brings to mind when you think of Yaakov and those 12, so spine of those 12 ribs and these paradigms that we're talking about? What structure does that remind you of?
The Beit HaMikdash.
The Beit HaMikdash, and before that? The Mishkan. The Mishkan centered in the middle of the desert with the 12 tribes organized around it, protecting the source of life of the world is the Mishkan until it becomes Beit HaMikdash. With the 12 tribes surrounding it, protecting it, guarding it, and drawing their life from it. It's an incredible concept. My Rebbe wasn't sure if he thought of it and never saw it in a sefer after that, or if he thought of it and then did see it in a sefer afterward, but either way, I'm taking it as MS. He said he was sitting one time in physical therapy, and he was talking to the physical therapist, and she mentioned 12 ribs. And he said, he's like, 12 ribs, and like jumped up, and she's like, what? You know, like, why is that so exciting? And he put all, and this all clicked with him, and he said he didn't remember if he saw it in a sefer afterward, but like, I say run with it. It's an incredible concept to think about it that way. But we're not done yet. We have one last piece. Literally one last piece. We said that the body, when we come back in Tchiyat HaMetim, comes back from the bones. It's not just the bones, but according to Chazal, there's actually one very specific bone which is guaranteed that it can never break, and that the body will rebuild itself from that one bone if that's all that's left. What bone is that called? The Luz bone. Where's the Luz bone situated? On the top of the spine. That's the eternal side, the beginning of the spine. The top of the spine is the Luz bone, and that's the eternal side of an individual. Bringing it right back again to the paradigms and the parallels of Yaakov Avinu. Interestingly also, once we talk about the Luz bone in that context, the Gemara says, I gave you a piece of it, you can look at it on your own, there's a lot going on in that Gemara, it's a very interesting Gemara, which talks about a city called Luz. And there are a few very interesting things that happened in the city called Luz. And you can take a look at the Gemara on your own. One of the very weird things, amazing things, that happened in the city called Luz, wouldn't you know it, nobody in Luz could die. Nobody was able to die. They lived eternally. And in fact, says the Gemara, that when a person felt that their lifetime is over, What would they do? What? No, when they thought their life was over, somebody was living in Luz says, you know what, I'm done. My life is done, yeah? They would walk right outside of the city of Luz and then they would drop down on the spot. There's something eternal about the Luz. Bone at the top of the spine connected to Yaakov. All of the inanim overlap with each other. And I was shocked that my Rebbe didn't point this out. Because if you go back to the Psukim, take a look at our very first source. I love it when the first source is always the first source and the last source. Go back to our first source, the beginning of the parsha, our psukim themselves that we're drawing from. Perek chafchet pasuk yud tet. That place where he has the dream. Vayikra et shem hamakom ahu beit kel. However, says the pasuk, v'ulam luz shem ha'ir l'harishona. Could you be more on the nose, right? I almost feel like I read the system, like I have planted the pasuk. It's right there. Luz was the name of the place that Yaakov was, where he had this dream about the ladder, which parallels the spine, which is all about what Beit HaMikdash is about, the source of life, relating to Tzviat HaMetim and the eternal side of Klal Yisrael, where he has the stones who are going to become the Avanim of Israel. It's all revolving around one inyan. It all comes back in on itself. So to wrap up, the Avanim here are incredibly significant. And we're going to keep coming back to these Avanim. We're not done with the Avanim yet. We're going to talk about them on... Is there a class on Monday?
No.
In Yirtzeh Hashem on Wednesday. I'm not going to be going to Israel anymore, so I'll be here. So we'll have Yirtzeh Hashem. It's like being in Israel. So we'll have on Wednesdays, we'll be coming back to these Avanim. We're going to be talking about... We talked about the beauty of the Avanim. We're going to talk about some of the complexity and the difficulties with our Avanim that we'll get to next time. But for our purposes now... The Evan is indicative of this Avin relationship. Yaakov, you know, setting out on this journey again, this opening quote-unquote paragraph is setting the stage for everything that he's going out to accomplish to reach Shlemut. We talked about last time in terms of reflecting what he's setting out to accomplish in himself, in being a paradigm for Klal Yisrael, in being that spine, the center line, the balance, the unity of body and soul. And now in terms of what he's literally going to accomplish there, in terms of going to create these Av, Bain relationships, to produce children, but not just children as children. Children is a continuous, eternal side of oneself that continues on forever, as reflected in the Avanim, in the stones. And in the human body, reflected in the Luz bone, in one's bones, and in the Luz bone, which are the eternal side of human being. B'zrat Hashem, we will continue on with our discussion of stones in a totally different way on...